Studio Sports at 5-9 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. So that was Blue Jays manager John Schneider. You heard Buck Martinez say that Cal Raleigh, who hits the tie-breaking home run yesterday to make it a 3-1 ball game, and then Mitch White doing his implosion thing, certainly sealing that game in extra innings. It did feel like Blue Jays' opportunity came in the bottom of the ninth. But it gets frittered away in extra innings. Cal Raleigh with 9 home runs in 15 regular season games, plus he has another against the Blue Jays in the postseason. Like, he has been a Blue Jay killer. You heard before that, too, last April, after hitting a home run against the Blue Jays, John Schneider saying, he's not very tough to pitch against when you execute your pitches. So this one, like, really surprised me, because this is like a year ago.
Yeah.
Guys have long memories, though. Cal Raleigh was asked about, I guess, those comments. Like, somebody, kudos as well to, like, the media member who...
Some shoe leather journalism there.
Yeah, and maybe this was something bubbling below the surface that they were alerted to early in the series. Like, maybe in, like a background conversation with Cal Raleigh. He's like, hey, you know who I hate? John Schneider. It's like, oh, well, let's wait for an opportunity
to ask you about that very thing. Well,
they did. And Cal Raleigh said this. I know a lot of guys have beef with him in the league. His comments aren't surprising. Okay, Brent, do you think that's true?
I at first blush take it as a guy who's just like, he's pumped up. He just won a game. He hit a big homer. He was reminded that somebody said a bad thing about him and the adrenaline kind of carrying him through. But I don't know. I go back to Schneider screaming at the Yankees bench. And, you know, this isn't hockey where it's like sacrosanct for a coach to get in the mix. Like, this is part of it. Like, managers are involved in these things from time to time. But I do wonder if that's what is kind of the crux of this issue. That was where my mind went back to him kind of screaming and jawing. It's a classic thing. If you're on the Blue Jays, I'm sure there are guys who say, let me pick my own battles. Let me fight my own battles. But I'm sure there are other guys who go, this is awesome. Our manager, especially, again, remember the reason why this managerial change was made. There was a need to get tougher and more serious and less fun, more rah-rah. And I think that I think that Schneider was kind of leaning into that. I do wonder if that's what he was kind of getting at with these comments. If there's anything to it. Mostly, to be honest, I think it's just a guy who's saying, yeah, I hit a homer. You reminded me of a bad thing. Bad dude. Don't like that guy. I think that's mostly what's at play. But my mind did a little bit go back to that Yankees kerfuffle. I believe he yelled, shut up, fat boy, at somebody.
Listen, it's a direct quote. You're not making that up out of whole cloth. Like, there must be at least one guy.
Well, and you do have a playoff series against a guy. And he was on that team for that series. There's a lot of carryover from that. It's like, you just have animosity. We've all been in, like, a playoff or a big game, or, you know, you're just competing against somebody and you go, don't like your face. I've decided to hate you. It's happened to everybody before. And I do wonder if there's just an element of the Mariners team where you go, God, you're just so grating.
Yeah. I look at the John Schneider story arc and I'm like, isn't that like a very likable, not relatable, but like, hey, this is a guy who spent his entire career in the minor leagues, didn't play one game in Major League Baseball, made it all the way up to AAA with one organization and then transitioned to coaching and then like rose through the ranks of the minor league coaching pyramid and then gets his shot at the major league level. And I'm like, isn't that like a likeable thing? I mean, that's not the guy's personality, but also, like, the personality, it seems an affable enough dude. But, okay, I have no idea about John Schneider, whether he's likable or not likable. I've just interacted with him, like, through media channels. Like, I've talked to him in person, but, like, in scrum format, which is, like, that's not a real person. That's not when you get to know the person.
It's their PR representative,
If I was going to guess as to why he would be unlikable to some people. And maybe this is different than having a beef, but like it would be like, here's this corporate stooge suck up. Like, here's this guy that sucked his way up all the way to the top of the pyramid. He realized he was never going to be a major league player, and he's just, you know, he understood the wheels he had to grease and the people he had to appease, which he did in a playoff game. Notably at the end of last season, that maybe that would rub some people the wrong way. I have no idea, but I'm like, this is the first time that's ever even been on my radar. And again, you're probably right. The majority of the backing of that is because a guy heard a comment, and we can talk about whether it's a reasonable thing to be mad at, the John Schneider comment from a year ago or not. But a guy that's mad, who's off to a slow start, as is his team, and is just, you know, lashing out at a dude. But again, like, it's one thing to say, like, I hate that guy. It's quite another to say, like, there are other people that hate that guy.
Yeah, that you bring up an interesting point with him kind of being the avatar for the new school manager of baseball. The thing I would, and you know, like, I know his manager Scott Servais had like a long major league career, so it's not the same thing there. But I don't know, the call's coming from inside the house. It was your GM who's like, "Hey, just win 54% of games. Don't try too hard here." It's like, that's certainly pretty corporate stoogey to me. So I think that,
but he's not on the field.
No,
like, I think
you're right.
I think
no,
all
there
the
is
GMs.
A,
I don't think there's too many players that are like, "Oh yeah, the GMs are the most relatable, fun-loving guys."
Yeah, certainly not. That's fair to bring up. But yeah, I think there is an element to that. I just don't know. And everybody's different, right? Like, we know this about all sports. There are guys who are, pick your sport, they're nerds for that sport and they love it and they watch games when they're not playing. And there are guys who are like, "Oh, Anthony Rendon, this is my job. I'm just here." I don't know how plugged in to, not to say that Kyle Rowley's like, "What? He pulled Barrios? I've never heard of this," but I don't know. Do you think, like, we have sat here thinking about the Jose Barrios pull for 6 months or however long ago, 100 years, whatever time frame it's been since it happened, but I don't know how much on the tip of the tongue that is for a player in Seattle. Like, I just don't, I don't know.
I don't know either. I will say it's on my radar, though. I'll be paying attention to, like, the other players' interactions with John Schneider now.
It's too bad this isn't Little League and they don't have a handshake, because then we could see how much respect he got in the handshake line.
Yeah. We could read some lips.
Yeah.
I'll be reading lips from the dugout. Anyways, last one on this. Like, you think it's reasonable to get upset at a guy who said he's not very tough to pitch against when you execute your pitches?
It's not reasonable, but he's a professional athlete. He's not a reasonable person. He is out there looking for the one minuscule half a percent thing that can get him over the edge. A guy said he couldn't do a thing. He did the thing. In the words of John Schneider, I won't say the second half, but shut up is what I think he wanted to say to him.
Yeah, I kind of think it is very reasonable, because it's very specifically, individually, pointedly insulting. You know, I haven't thought about it. Kind of wish somebody would say that about some of the Blue Jays players.
Oh, my
God.
God.
Can you
imagine?
And it
can't be us. Like, a guy over there's got to say it.
What you do, what generally happens is the John Cooper thing, where it's like, those guys are so good and so amazing. Like,
it's actually
amazing that they haven't won, like, all the Stanley Cups.
How do they not go 162-0 every year?
But how awesome would it be if, like, Aaron Boone was like, "Yeah, here's the thing about Vlad. Like, he came up as, like, a really good prospect, and he had that one good season in the fraud ballparks, and, like, ultimately, like, disappointing career. Not a guy we have to be afraid of in the middle of that lineup."
Okay,
not to say that would spur him on, but I'd be interested to see the sliding doors moment. Like, well, what happens to Vlad's career if that's in the public sphere?
I would like to see that as well, but if I could have my druthers, and I think this person needs less of it, but I also think they would respond more to it, is I'd like somebody to say, they couldn't say all that, but find a thing to say about Bo Bichette so he could turn into Barry Bonds.
It's like
he already plays the game. Like, we all talk about him, like, he's 0-for-5 every night with 5 Ks and boots every ball that's ever been hit to him.
Yeah, here's the thing. I don't know how it would go with Vlad. I know how it would go with Bo.
And that's why I'd very much like to see that.
I don't know. I do feel like he's maximizing that anger, though.
Remember when they were passed around the hat for Irvin Santana? They should do that to, like, just send a nice gift basket to somebody on the Rockies.
I wonder if there's any active major league managers that are on Cameo that you could...
Or, like, even non-active.
Yeah, you're right.
Just a famous one.
Yeah, we should.
It's like Cito Gaston, some bad stuff about...
We should be grinding on
that. We should. We can expense that.
We should be able to. All right. Leafs Devils again tonight. So now...
Catch the fever.
Okay, last time they played the Devils on Tuesday, that was like they just were alerted to the Jack Hughes of it all and the shutdown. And since then they've... Although it hasn't updated on the standings page that I use. Apparently they have been actually mathematically eliminated from the postseason, the Devils, by now. So, like, now... Okay, you were just scrambling to make the tee times on Tuesday. Now it's like, all right, it's fast approaching.
Buddy's trips are booked.
Yeah. Okay, so they're done. They're out of it. Austin Matthews needs 4 goals in his final 4 games to reach 70. Is there anything else that matters for this Leafs team in these final four games? So you got Devils tonight. You got the Red Wings in a very meaningful game for them. That'll be the last meeting. That'll be the last time, unless like you care about the home ice, or you know maybe they're still in it for Tampa catching them for the wild card thing. Yeah. But I don't think either.
No.
Even if that's a factor for the last two games, neither team is going to ice a team or do anything strategically during those games to maximize their attempt to win it. It's all about the postseason for those final two games. So Saturday will be the last game with any meaning for either team. Is there anything that matters for this Leafs team outside of Auston Matthews scoring 70 goals?
Yeah, I want to see what's up with Joel Edmondson. If he's gonna get in the game, how do the D pairs shake out? I think the longer this trends, and like you said, I guess it's really just kind of one or two more games, I think you have to act as though Timothy Liljegren will not be a part of things to start the playoffs. If you get him back at some point in time and you need to make a switch, you can do that. But I just think you kind of have to operate as though he's not going to be a part of it to begin things. And that's why I think Edmondson coming back is massive, because you're going to have to boot somebody over to the right side. We've seen that movie with TJ Brody. Not so great. We've seen that movie with Jake McCabe. A little bit of better returns, so you're still going to have to find one more guy to kind of play on that right side if it's not going to be Brody. That's the thing I think you kind of go back to. I don't think it's going to be Connor Timmins, but I do think he is the guy. And now this is a little bit squinting more to see things, but I think he's the guy who is not so much in competition, because like him and Giordano give you completely different things. But I think he is a guy still trying to gain a little bit of leash with Sheldon Keefe in terms of how much can he be trusted. And not to say he's one of your 6D. He will not be one of the 6D. But is he somebody that can be trusted if you have to go to him in a playoff series as your 7th, 8th defenseman, whatever it is? I think that's what it's got to be.
Yeah, you're right. Like, I think it matters to see Joel Edmondson. We'll see if he... I mean, this was the game that we were told was circled for him this season. Kelly Yarncroke, Timothy Liljegren, it's like the final two games next week, maybe. And William Nylander, the chase for 100 points.
Yeah.
It's all well and good, although I think you rightly pointed out that, like, I'm sure he wants to hit it, but it's not the be-all, end-all for him. I don't think it. It's hard to imagine that.
He just really doesn't strike me. Like, I'm a person, and it's like, yeah, easier to not dwell on things when you've accomplished a lot. But it's like, I still dwell on things that I couldn't have got, like, I didn't get done, be it a round of golf, or like, I lost this game, whatever. William Nylander doesn't strike me as the guy who, when he's like 55 years old, goes, but I only had 98 points once in an NHL season.
No, I think he'll be pretty pleased with whatever's taking place.
I bet he will. Probably wearing that shirt he was wearing on the...
And should be. No disagreement.
Agreed.
I would probably be feeling pretty good if I was William Nylander as well. It's amazing like how many of the things going into this stretch that I thought were going to be important and still evaluating that I think are dead. Like, I do think the Marner-Matthews thing is dead. Like, I think it's over. I don't think anything can happen in these final four games to take you away from Bertuzzi, Matthews, and Domi, game one of the postseason.
I certainly hope not, but I am always wincing at the possibility. I'm like, you ever drive with somebody and they're the passenger, but they normally are a driver? Mm-hmm. And they're just a little like, whoa. Because their angles are all off. Oh, they're used to being on the left side of the car, and they're on the right. Like,
oh, my God.
And that's what it feels like a bit of just like, whoa, okay, it's just a little uncomfortable. It's a little too close here.
I mean, that's me, but I don't vocalize it. Love my mother-in-law, but gotta say...
I feel like you vocalize it when you're in the passenger seat of my car.
Oh, well, yeah, but you're a horrible driver.
It's not
so, like, that's different.
Okay. Sure.
That's awful. You drive, like... Imagine Miss Daisy was, like... and I guess in driving Miss Daisy, she's not actually driving.
Like, I was like, oh, yeah.
Okay, imagine, Miss Daisy was allowed to drive, and she was, like, very cautious, but also terrible. So, like, you get the worst of both worlds. Like, driving super slow.
I was not driving super slow.
Super slow, but also, like, not, like,
you're just trying to get me to incriminate myself. Be like, I was going to buck blank this morning coming in.
No, you don't want to speed, but, like, there's a certain acceptable speed that you should be going. But, yeah, you drive very cautiously, but also, like, not fully familiar with, like, the customs of what you should be doing on the road. Like, you reverse out of intersections when you can't make your left turn
and stuff.
That's
not true. Anyways, again, it's
yeah,
not
so, like,
in
yeah,
an intersection
I can't
at that point in time.
Say anything during those instances. But, yeah, my mother-in-law gets a lot of, like, oh, wow, do you know what the speed limit is here? Like, it's... And yeah, that's tough. I've been on long Texas road trips with her. Love her to death, but yeah. No, I very much related to that anecdote. the other thing is
Even remember what it was related to.
Leafs.
Yeah, for sure.
The other thing is the goalie battle. Also think it's dead. It's over. It's dead and buried.
What do you want to see there, though?
So I was actually thinking about this. It's tough. Saturday's the last game that matters, right?
Yep.
And then you got the back-to-backs against the two Florida teams. Uh-huh. You don't want to play him against the Panthers, Samsonov, right?
No chance.
Going to be the game one starter. But you also don't want to play him in the last game of the season, I don't think.
Uh-uh.
So, but then are you going to start him? So Wall starts tonight and then Samsonov on Saturday, and then he goes a whole week without playing a hockey game before game one? I don't know. That seems like maybe too much rest. Like maybe I'm overthinking it, but I could see a world where it's, hey, Saturday is his last game of the season in the game that matters. And we just shut him down for the week. And it's Martin Jones. And I don't know, Martin Jones making back-to-back starts.
I think you nailed it. It's Martin Jones. And hey, Marty, hope you're not tired. Even if you are, tough, get in there. Time to earn them checks. Yeah. I think that's the way you have to go about it. You wouldn't want him in either of those games against the Florida teams. The Panthers, this is something I kind of want to save a little, but so I don't want to tap dance on it too much, but it's like the Panthers will be out for blood in those games, regardless of who's in them. And I don't mean from the Leafs perspective. I mean from the Panthers. It's like, I don't know that it'll be the Panthers, but I think they'll be out for blood in that game.
They just hire a bunch of goons that can't even skate?
Well, I mean, like, it wouldn't be the first time that guys have been called up from a farm team to, you know, go out there and exact some justice or, I don't know, pre-justice if in this instance. So I don't want him, I don't want Samsonov sniffing either of those games. It has to be Saturday as his last start, I think. Unless... short of the player saying, no, that's too much for me. Short of them having some data that says that, and actually screw the data. I don't buy that. Mm. Short of the player saying, I need to get in there between now, then you give them, I think the Tampa game and the last game. That's the way I would go about it. Cause you just cannot have him in there against the Panthers. But unless he begs to play that final game, I think Saturday's got to be his last one.
Yeah, as long as he's fine with a full week off.
Because yeah, it looks like if he feels Saturday differently about it, then I do think you got to give him that last game. Can't be the Panthers game, though. It can't.
Last one on the Leafs for now. The Athletic with a breakdown of the nerd stats on the Hart Trophy candidates.
Mm.
I'm getting more and more mad that Austin Matthews is not more considered the front runner here. It's like a four-man race. Like the possibility very much exists that Austin Matthews is not even a finalist for the Hart Trophy. And I don't think I've been mad enough about that. Because, well, we know the goal totals are ridiculous. Yep. The Athletic has this thing called net rating, so that they've got an offensive rating and a defensive rating.
That war stat I didn't want. Yeah.
You don't want to hear it if it tells you a thing that you don't like.
No, I actually don't. Like, I don't. I want to, for the good. This is like when the cell phone was invented. For the good of society, we should have just said, no, stop this now. It's going to be a scourge on all of us. That's how I feel about this stat you're about to give me. But now that you've mentioned it, I am curious.
Okay, so Austin Matthews does not actually have the highest offensive rating of the MacKinnon, McDavid, Kucherov group.
Kucherov has the highest?
No.
Oh.
It is actually MacKinnon.
Okay. I can see that.
But he blows them away in defensive rating. So in net rating, he's actually second, right behind MacKinnon. Also, as we well know, primary points percentage, ridiculous, the leader. He's at 86.5% of his points being primary assists. The second place finishers are Kucherov and MacKinnon, both at 72%. So that's like 14% higher. Again, numbers are tough when you're talking about on radio. It's just, here's the takeaway you need to have.
More.
Way more primary points percentage-wise than any of those guys. Connor McDavid, fourth of the group in primary points. And then 5-on-5 points?
Uh-huh.
Come on. Come on. 5-on-5 primary points? Oh, my goodness. 90% of his points, 5-on-5 primary points, which is way above everybody else. The closest pursuer, 12 points back, 12 percentage points back, is Nathan MacKinnon. But, yeah, blowing everybody away in primary points, 5-on-5 primary points, and defensive rating puts him above everybody. I'm starting to get more angry that he's not considered the front runner right now.
Yeah, the Hart Trophy is such a tough award because it's not the Art Ross. Like, if it was that easy, we just wouldn't bother to have it. You would just give whoever wins the Art Ross it. But we cannot overstate to the extent that offense is overvalued. And I don't even have a problem with that. Like, I think offense is harder to do than defense. It's like, you can find competent defensive players. It's harder to find even competent.
Yeah, like a guy that would score 70 goals.
For example.
Very difficult.
But I do think the fact that he has that massive gap and the defensive impact he has on the game has to be mentioned. I think, and I know people will hear this and say, no, that's wrong. The objective right answer should win. I actually, and part of this is the nature of the sport, I feel differently about this in the NBA, for example, than I do the NHL. I have no problem with it being a narrative-driven award. Mm. When we're sitting here counting up Auston Matthews' legacy and he walks into the Hall of Fame one day, it's not going to be because he had one Hart Trophy versus two or three Hart Trophies. Mm. It's going to be the counting stats that he has and the team success. So I actually have very little problem with it being a narrative-driven award.
As long as you
award.
Have one. I will say that it's used as a counter-argument when somebody has no MVP awards.
Yes.
Or like outside of Nolan Ryan, who has no Cy Young
Which
awards.
Which is wild.
Yeah, you're like, well, how can you be a Hall of Famer if you were never the best ever, like in 1 year?
I've given this take about goalies in the NHL many, many times. Like, especially that position's so tough too, because it's like, you have your own award and you weren't even the best. That's really, really tough. But I think as long as you've kind of crossed that bar, you're right. If you don't have it, it does get held against you. And then I will admit, I don't love that part of the narrative story. Like, as long as you have a narrative based in the season, I like it. Right. I don't like the narrative of, well, this guy hasn't got one. He's due for his. I feel differently about that though for positional awards. Like, I can hear that argument for a Norris or even a Vezina, but for a Hart, I think the narrative argument, and again, I have no problem with you making one, I'm not saying you, the royal you, have to make it based on the in-season. It can't be, but he needs one, in my opinion.
Yeah. He deserves one.
Yes.
In my opinion.
He being the mustachioed Matthews.
Yes. And we'll ask our next couple of hockey guests, Damian Cox, and then after 8 o'clock, Frank Cervelli. But our Leafs historian next. As the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning Joe, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. I assume it's still raining. That's the problem with this studio. I like this studio because it's like cozier, it's smaller, it sounds better, I think, than the other studio.
We got
TV
some rain.
Studio.
We got some rain.
Can you see outside?
Not while I'm doing the show. Like, here's how far I have to be from the mic. You tell me if this picks it up. This will be interesting radio.
Yeah.
I can now see the street. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's far away.
Yeah, it's too far.
No, I miss being able to see outdoors. Okay. Although I don't need to see the rain.
When were you seeing outdoors?
At the old studio.
I guess there's light, but there's like a window through a studio.
It's two windows.
Two windows. It's not right outside.
I miss seeing that upside down wheelbarrow on top of the roof.
Right.
Across the way.
I think a dead raccoon lives under, I think.
Mm-hmm. All right. There's no segue to our next guest.
Could not.
Damian Cox, who is a Toronto Star contributor and our Leafs historian. How's it going, Damian?
This is Les Nessman, actually, and I can confirm that it is raining outside and also that Turkey still cannot fly. I can confirm those two. You know, the problem is that only reaches a certain segment.
I know. I got to
take it all back.
I've never seen an episode of WKRP, but I know that reference.
I am 34 years old, and I get that reference. So it reaches a little farther down than you might think, Damon.
When you get to my vintage, you measure almost everything by how long it takes you to come up with a reference. And somebody said, okay, what was the name of the receptionist? Like the name of the, and it was Jennifer something. And then I said, and then there was the other woman, and I hesitated, and I thought, it's not coming. And then it came. Bailey Quarters out of nowhere. So yeah. I was.
You've lost me. You had us, and then you lost me. I have no idea.
Well, and my other thought this morning was,
Listen, who's hosting this segment, you or me?
So, you guys just hang on now, was, so if I had an underperforming hockey team, where would I go? Oh, yeah, Salt Lake City. Ew. And particularly since they don't have an NHL-sized rink. That's where I go.
Okay.
Because I can't think of a single – well, there is Atlanta. Mm. That's another good idea, but – like, can you believe these dudes? I mean, it's quite something.
Okay, so I was going to build to this, but let's start here then, because it does feel like the Coyotes experiment in Arizona is finally over. Although, like I said earlier, I do need to see the body because we've been not quite not quite this close, but we've been close before, and there they are playing in a 5,000 seat arena where they're not even the primary tenant. So I can't say for sure it's going to happen. I think just you look at the market or you look at the climactic region of Utah and Salt Lake City, and that kind of makes sense from a hockey perspective. But yeah, clearly another NHL franchise in the greater Toronto area makes more sense, and anywhere makes more sense than the Coyotes. Can we at least admit that?
Well, yeah, I guess almost
in Arizona,
anywhere. Yeah, I suppose. But I mean, Salt Lake City. I mean, like, I've been there for hockey. I was there at the 2002 Olympics. I've seen what exists there. The Calgary Flames organization had a farm team there for a long time. I'm not sure who's there now. You know, so there's some hockey history in Salt Lake City, but like this is a reach of epic proportions. And I suspect if this happens, and it sounds like we may know as soon as next week.
Yeah.
If this happens, it's because they've figured out a way for a bunch of owners to make a bunch of money. Something like they're going to sell this team back to the league for a chunk of money, and then they're going to be able to sell this team to somebody else who's willing to pay a bit more.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like a Ponzi scheme or something. Like, $1 billion, they have to sell it back to the league, but the league can then sell it for $1.2 billion? What? How come he's not getting the $1.2 billion?
Everybody gets to put $50 million in their jeans and they don't have to go to Mullet Arena anymore. You know, I mean, that sounds like a Gary Bettman scheme. Short term, no vision, very little chance of success, but he puts some money in the owner's pockets and therefore he gets to stay until he's been there longer than Clarence Campbell, which is the only objective of Gary Bettman's existence right now as NHL commissioner is that he wants to set the record. Other than that, I mean, this has got to be, along with the Chicago Blackhawks situation, his greatest humiliation as NHL commissioner, to have stuck it out for this long and then to have to move the team to Salt Lake City is pretty embarrassing, guys.
Yeah, I mean, I have my issues with the Arizona situation. The thing I keep coming back to with this, and obviously there's no way to put this genie back in the bottle, but the thing I keep coming back to with this is, isn't this just like an expansion problem partially? Like, do we not just have too many teams in the NHL? I mean, there's some talk about another team and going to Atlanta, and then, you know, you're not going to have 33. So what does that ultimately end up looking like? Like, when I hear the criticisms of Bettman, and like, I agree, the thing I keep jumping to is the overexpansion of the league. And hey, have Vegas and Seattle been good stories? It seems like from the outside, yeah, they have been. But I mean, when we talk about the product on a night in, night out basis, I mean, you know, again, like we have questions about the Leafs lineup. Can you imagine some of the fourth lines they're watching on teams that aren't this good? And that's the thing I keep coming back to with all this.
Well, and how good would the league be with four fewer teams? You know, I mean, how much the higher quality, right? And but Bettman doesn't care. I mean, he showed that along too. Look, he's got two plays: have more outdoor games and expand. Those are his only two plays. They have no imagination. When you look at the last year's Stanley Cup final, and I think they maybe had an audience of 3 million or something like that for the deciding game in the Stanley Cup final in the United States. And then you look at the women's college basketball game the other day that draws 18 million, and you're thinking, holy smokes, has this guy missed the mark? Yeah. Not being able to grow this sport in a meaningful way in 30 years of trying. And now it's all passed them by, and now they're putting a team in Salt Lake City. And now, as you say, all you're doing is diluting the product a little bit more. But I think I'm always shocked at how what smaller percentage of media who follow the NHL will call them on this. Instead, there's more just about, oh, look, they're growing the game, and oh, look, they're going to go here. Isn't this exciting? And oh, they've made another $1 billion or whatever. It's not good for hockey, guys. It's just not.
So maybe the answer to this is you don't need to, but you know, I hear the criticisms again. I agree with almost all of them. What do you think are the opportunities that have kind of passed Bettman by? And again, like, you know, if you were the NHL commissioner, you'd be making the changes here. But yeah, that's the thing.
One day, Damo.
Well, because the thing I point to, and I don't know that it's a fair, direct, like one to one, but I think the cap being as hard and fast as it is, and not that you can't make trades, but we see how much transactions generate news cycles in other leagues. Like, I think that's been one area where, you know, I understand he's taken his marching orders from the owners there, and they don't want the cap to be anything other than a hard and fast cap. But that is one area where I think it's really, really kind of neutered the ability to kind of grow the game. And I think so often we think of that, it literally is just like grow the footprint of the game. Have 100 NHL teams, and I think that's the complete opposite way you need to go about it. I think growing the game means making it more interesting, and that is such a big kind of pillar of it for me, is the hard and fast cap.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's lots of elements, you know, and we can talk about things that are in the game, things that aren't in the game, you know, focus. I mean, you've got such a brilliant array of young stars right now. It sure doesn't feel like they're selling them in a meaningful way. I'm not in the U.S. all the time, but, you know, you sure don't get it. I mean, there's been this idea, let's grow the game, so we'll go to China, or we'll go to Finland, or we'll go to... Meanwhile, there's so much opportunity and need for growth of the game at a participatory level in the U.S. and Canada, because numbers are dropping, right? So, you know, you got, I think there's that end of it. There is, now, at the same time, there's the NHL's lack of commitment to the Olympics, to a meaningful World Cup. I think there are those things. I mean, it's such a scattershot approach to everything. I mean, you can even look at the way they handled you know, the business with Pride Tape earlier this year and Pride Games. Well, you can kind of do this, but if you don't want to do this and these players don't have to do this, there's just no consistent program from an NHL office that's pretty stale, you know, and I think fresh new leadership would be one thing, but certainly I think you've got to, just like they once held a summit on the game, I think this is a league that needs a summit on, guys, where are we going here? What's the opportunity? And just diluting the product by adding more teams is not the answer.
All right, this is the official start of your candidacy. You're announcing that?
I'm not available. My golf game requires my full attention over the next few months.
Good man, Damo.
But I might have some time at the end of November.
Like a consulting gig, kind of.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's the dream for all of us, eh? To consult. Have you done? Listen, I'm not against a consulting gig. Have you ever done any consulting, Damien?
You know what? I'm going to tell you guys a secret.
Uh-huh.
I've never told anybody this, okay, but what the hell? You know, it's almost over.
All right, hit record back there, boys. Let's go. All right, here we go.
No. Once upon a time, what year would it have been? It was the early part of this century, and this is when there was all the talk around them fixing the game. So much around 2004, 2005, and the NHL pulled together they wanted to put together a group that would look at the game in a bunch of different ways, invited people from a wide variety of things. And I got a letter inviting me from Gary Bettman to be part of that. I'll bet then. And I said no.
Wow.
Because it seemed to be a conflict of interest. Now, I'm not Joe Media Ethics by any stretch of the imagination, but I actually still have that letter. And the next time you guys come over for drinks, I'll show you the letter. I keep forgetting.
It'll be the first time.
It's just that my golf game requires my full attention right now.
You already said that.
How about that? I've never told anybody that story.
That's a good one. That's interesting. No, I mean, now we got to kind of dig down on this. Was it like there was financial remuneration for this?
No.
It's
just... No, it just seemed like, you know, you can't cover a sport and then work for the sport at the same time. At least back then you couldn't. Now you can, no problem.
No, that's interesting. Yeah, no, listen, you're a Big J journalist. I don't know if I'm in a position where I could ever claim that. Like,
yeah,
I'm
that's just, why you shepherd the Northern Star Committee. Yeah, like, that's no right. wonder, honestly. What ethics you do have?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I have almost none, but I do have an ego. So.
Well, as someone with an ego, let me just say, like, you do such a wonderful job putting that committee together every year.
You guys are sweet. You're still trying to get on. Yeah.
Well, not we'll him. See. No, Ben would actually hate it. It'd be like a punishment from him. Yeah. It'd be like more work for free.
No.
More work for Ben.
Now, me,
and
on the other hand.
Keep track of whether it's raining outside.
That's like, a lot to do.
I know. Work.
Yeah. okay, let me do a counter argument to the bad things you said about Gary Bettman. No Arizona Coyotes, no Austin Matthews, who might score 70 goals this season, Damian. I was just saying, what's your for?
Mm. Well, that's like saying, you know, there's not an NHL team in Slovenia, but we still got Anže Kopitar, right?
Mm.
I mean, you know, it's not necessarily a cause and effect thing.
Yeah, but I think, you know, at least the infrastructure. Listen, I'm not going to debate Anže Kopitar versus Austin Matthews.
Hey, there's no NHL team in Alaska, but Scott Gomez managed to make it to the NHL.
Sure, but there was hockey there. Like, was there even a rink before the Coyotes?
Yeah, there's always been the Phoenix Roadrunners have been there for many decades, playing as a minor league organization. Sorry, can't go with you on that one.
No, okay, I stand corrected. Austin Matthews would have found his way. It's not that he would have been
better.
Yeah.
Not having to watch all that. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's not the origin story of him being in the building for Alex Ovechkin scoring that sliding goal while he was on the ice. No. Has nothing to do with Austin Matthews being the National Hockey League. Anyways, I was just outlining some of the statistics.
That's all you got on behalf of Bettman? That's it?
He didn't say it was a good defense. He was just going to lay one out.
I don't think you're getting invited to the next meeting.
I mean, yeah, you throw that into the bucket of reasons, but sure. Like, yeah, maybe that's the cherry on top. But, yeah, he might score 70 goals. He is a Selke-level dude. Like, he's already finished top 10 in Selke voting before, and I would hazard to say that he's going to finish higher than that this season. Hey, Gretzky got Selke votes as well. He finished 25th one year, 24th, and then, he had a 26th-place finish. Hey, Mario also got some Selke votes as well. He finished 17th one year. I mean, those guys are obviously the greatest that ever lived when it came to the offensive side of the game. The more and more I think about this, though, that Austin Matthews is such a 200-foot player that he's going to maybe score 70 goals. The fact that he feels like almost fourth in the Hart Trophy race is more and more insulting the more I think about it.
Well, and I think he should be insulted for a variety of reasons, but let's talk about this one, and that is here's a guy who not only plays a 200-foot game but scores more 5-on-5 goals than anybody else. And this debate I'm hearing about what's worth more, 70 goals or 100 assists, come on.
We did it yesterday.
I mean, you know, second assists you get if a puck hits you in the left ear and bounces to somebody else.
McDavid has 38 of those.
Yeah, I mean, you get, like, that's just, I mean, I'm not taking away from him as a player, but, I mean, the hardest thing to do in the NHL is score goals, and Austin Matthews is doing it better than anybody else. Now, the MVP thing, like, I can see the Kucherov argument. Like, the way that team has come back into it, I could definitely see that. But I can't see how you would vote for McDavid ahead of Matthews. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
You mentioned the Kucherov case there, and, you know, obviously it's performance, what he's done, but part of it is, like, the gap between him and not necessarily the way we feel about the other players on the team, but just the way they've performed in terms of racking up points. Where are you at on the idea of narrative even entering the discussion? I mean, there are a lot of people who would say, no, we can just know there is one definitive best player, but I do think that, and, you know, the argument I made is this isn't the NBA where we're going to hold hold whether Matthews has one heart or three hearts against him as an all-time great. So I actually have no problem with the idea of narrative entering the discussion. I don't think it should be the prevailing driver of who wins the MVP award, but I actually have no problem with it if that's what ends up being kind of a tiebreaker or you know, something in a scenario like this.
Yeah, I mean, it is supposed to be MVP, and that can be many things to many different people, right? I mean, it depends what you want. Look, I think Kucherov gets extra points because of the way he mocked the All-Star game, too, and made a farce out of that. So, you know, I think that's also on his side. But look, I don't think you guys would accuse me of being a Leaf backer or a Leaf fan.
No.
But I think you can make a case for Matthews getting the Rocket, the Hart, the Selke, and the Lady Bing. Mm-hmm. No problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been that great this season. But, you know, I really think Kucherov has done an amazing job. And the fact that he was able to fend off those guys, or at least he has so far, McKinnon might still catch him. McDavid's hurt, as you guys know, so he won't. I mean, really says a lot for him. So I probably would go, with those two guys are the two, and who it would be one. I'd probably say Matthews, because I just don't know how you look away from this kind of a season.
Me neither. I mean, and I wouldn't put money on him winning all of those awards, but it's possible. And if he did, how are we not talking about this as one of the greatest seasons anyone's ever had in the history of the sport?
Great question. Yeah, great question. And I think, by the way, to add to that argument, I think you can make a case that Kucherov's got more talent around him than Matthews does.
Mm-hmm.
And the Leafs are a better team. I think, well, it's certainly the greatest season ever by a Leaf. There's no question about that. We've been blessed to see this. And I think now it's interesting how far they let it go. I've been debating this morning. Do you let him keep playing? Obviously, the Oilers sit out McDavid. Look, the Leafs have a better record than anybody over, the last 28 games or something. I think you make whatever decision keeps this team hot. And you cannot make the decision based on, well, if he gets hurt, then everybody's going to yell at us. You know, that could happen anyways. And anybody
could happen tonight.
Hurt. Yeah, absolutely. So I think probably you have some responsibility to play him Saturday against Detroit, because Detroit's in the playoff fight. Next week in Florida, I think it's his call. I really do. I think you say, look, if you think this is how it's going to prepare you best to play, then you play. Mm. I think it becomes his call.
Yeah, the problem with that, though, Damian, is the player is always going to opt to play, right? Like, you at a certain, if
not
you do
always.
I think almost certainly most guys, and especially with the milestone on. I mean, not that that's like, he obviously wants the team success thing too, but I think these guys never think they're going to get hurt, never think it's going to impact their ability to be ready for the postseason. I think at a certain point you do have to take the responsibility away from the player. I'm not saying this is exactly that instance, and I also don't think like some mid-20s guy, you know, playing an extra hockey game, 18 minutes in a hockey game 4 days before a playoff game is the worst thing in the world. But if you think it's going to impact him by any percentage, his being at the peak of his powers for maybe Saturday game one against the Panthers, then you have to say thanks, but no thanks. You're not playing.
I think he would know best what's going to have him ready and what he can do. And I'm just saying, in this particular case,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, I don't think there's any evidence saying, well, if you sit him out, then he'll be better.
No, there's no
which
evidence
based on other, you know, there's, you know, like, are you protecting him? You know, I don't know. I mean, you want peak performance, and athletes in all sports will tell you a bunch of different things of what the best way to do. So I think the other thing too is he may be banged up as it is.
Yeah.
So you know, you may be saying, yeah, no, we are going to see him out because he needs to heal up a little bit.
This was a peak performance by you, Damian. Well done.
This is top 30, I think.
Minimum.
For sure. Still raining out.
All right,
by
good.
The way.
Yeah. Call us back with an update. Tell us when it stops raining.
But you won't give me your phone number. Anyway.
Oh, you know what? I just got yours the other day. I'll text you. All right.
that would be. Oh, my phone broke.
Goodbye, Damian.
See you guys.
There's Damian Cox, Toronto Star contributor, our Leafs historian. All right. Time now for the Wake and Rake, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book. 19 plus, bet responsibly. Leafs, Devils from Scotiabank Arena tonight on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, this is a fat, juicy money line. Leafs minus 200 against the Devils team that is packed it in. And Jack Hughes going under the knife. Plus 165 if you think for some reason the Devils are motivated to win a hockey game. I'm not sure why you would think that. The total is 6.5.
Let's go over. That's what needs to happen is an over. Mostly off the stick of one gentleman. We just spent a lot of time talking about him. Auston Matthews. Like him to score. If he does that, I think the over is going to hit. And I think the over is going to hit regardless. It's 6.5. You need 7 goals.
Yeah.
You get minus 110 on either side of it. Give me the over.
I mean, it's hard for me to imagine the Leafs don't win by at least 2 goals in this hockey game. Give me Leafs minus 1.5 at plus 120. Let's also look at a couple of Masters bets as maybe the first round does get underway at some point today.
Oh, we do have an update on that.
Okay, what's that?
10:30, honorary starters off at 10:10.
Love that. Love me that. Masters odds that I'm most interested in, if you think this is finally the breakthrough for Rory McIlroy, you got an odds boost. It was plus 1,000. You get plus 1,200. Jordan Spieth, Hideki Matsuyama to both finish in the top 10. It was plus 600. Odds boost, you get it at plus 700. Scheffler, Rahm, Matsuyama all to win their first round 3 balls was plus 1,000, now plus 1,200.
I like Zalatoris and Cantley both to finish in the top 20, including ties. It was 300, boosted up to 350. Those guys are both pretty solid. I don't think they're going to shoot themselves in the foot early on. And with the mucky weather, you're going to need that to have a chance at it. So that's the one I like the most.
That was the Wake and Rake presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book, 19 plus. Bet responsibly. When we come back, Frank Cervelli, president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. As the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.